James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Happy to have each and every one of you along with us this afternoon. The show originating, of course, from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, all across the land and all around the world. And welcome to everybody. I want to say hi to all you folks over at Democratic Underground and the folks listening via iTunes, something rather new here in the last, what, month or so, maybe 2 months, I'm not exactly sure. Lots of iTunes people showing up, people over at Democrats.com, SmirkingChimp.com. Lots of our favorite websites. So welcome to everybody, and we hope you'll stay with us. We got a great show for you today. We've got a guest coming up around the bottom of the hour. His name is Behzad Yabmayan. I'll butcher that name. He said he didn't care. he's written a book called Embracing the Infidel, Stories of Muslim Migrants on the Journey West. He's a writer for TomDispatch.com, and he's going to talk to us about the situation in Iran and the relations between the United States and Iran and how they got that way historically. Very, very interesting guy, and I know you'll want to hear that. Coming up at 4 o'clock, 4:05 actually, we're going to have Jeff Allen Wolf of Head On Radio Network fame, and Jeff and I are going to chew the fat for a while, and that'll be coming up at 4 o'clock. And then at 4:30 today, we're going to have Bruce from Talking Radio with our weekly segment of what's going on in talk radio. So a four-hour show packed into 2 hours today. That's what we're going to have to do, and, well, we'll do our best to do it. I know we'll give it a try. My grandpa used to say that's like trying to put 4 pounds of something into a 2-pound sack. Only used a rather descriptive language for that anyway. Oh, my God. The Ima story is still going on. And by the way, you can call us at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. You know, last night I watched a little bit of that Tucker Carlson show while I was having dinner. And if you wanted to know what just kind of a media we're dealing with nowadays, all you had to do is watch Carlson's show last evening. All of his guests had been regulars on Imus in the morning, and all of them said they would return to Imus's show. And, you know, Imus had made a living for 30 years or more by making the same kinds of crude, revolting comments that he's now been fired for over at MSNBC. And no one has even given it a second thought so long as they could go on the show and hawk their books or their shows and get valuable FaceTime on a program with millions of listeners. That's what it's all about. We've always heard that the, you know, that old media adage that any publicity is good as long as they spell your name right. Well, count me out on that one. I would not keep company with anybody who has an attitude like Imus's or indulge in racist or homophobic or anti-feminine comments. I've dropped people from my social list because of things like that, and I will continue to do so for the rest of my days. It's been a two-way street for these media folks. Imus has had the likes of Jonathan Alter, and these are the ones, some of them, that I saw last night. Jonathan Alter and Craig Crawford and David Gregory and Howard Feynman and Mike Barnicle and Chris Matthews and Tim Russert and many others on his show. And by having them on there, they gave him credibility that he didn't necessarily deserve otherwise. And at the same time, they get this valuable publicity in hawking their books or their shows or whatever. It's the old insider pat my back and I'll pat your deals. And it's really sickening to know, to me personally, that the members of the media take part in a thing like that. It leaves one to wonder just how honest they are with us when they're willing to pimp themselves to the likes of a guy like Imus, who frankly never brought a damn thing to the table, in my opinion. He's now talking about how he is a comedian. Well, he's not funny. To me, he's never funny. I admit I haven't seen that much of his show. He's been a bully. He's made terrible remarks lately about Hillary Clinton and some of the other candidates. He's crude. He's nasty. And for my money, he isn't particularly intellectually stimulating at all either. And if he didn't talk about somebody's looks or call them cute little names, he wouldn't have anything at all to say to his audience. But by going on his show, and this is my point of this whole thing, these so-called respectable media figures are really endorsing this type of gutter entertainment, even if they don't agree with what he says. By going on their show, they're, giving their stamp of approval. I'm on his show, it must be okay. And I really happen to think the Fourth Estate isn't doing a very good job for the people nowadays, and this is a perfect example of what I mean, especially that insider Washington thing. I don't think the media, the establishment media anyway, gets it. And really, that isn't good for any of us. Not at all. But another point has been brought up to me, and I take this one rather seriously. I wondered about it all along, and I've done a little research, made a few lists. In April of 2003, Fox News Channel's Bill O'Reilly hosted a fundraiser for Best Friends. That's a charity which benefits inner-city school kids. And as reported in the Washington Post, on April the 15th, 2003, O'Reilly was trying to fill the time before this singing group connected with a charity called The Best Men was set to perform. And what did O'Reilly said? Does anybody? And here's what he said. Does anyone know where the best men are? I hope they're not in the parking lot stealing our hubcaps. So this happens to be a black group, okay? Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh, talking about the new Survivor series here a while back, suggested that the African-American tribe are the worst swimmers, and the Hispanics, quote to quote him, will do things other people won't do. And then we have Ann Coulter. She received a real rock star welcome at the Conservative Action Political Conference, the CPAC, here a few weeks back, but when and then she used the term ragheads twice in her speech before a crowd of college students. And you've all heard her faggot comment about John Edwards. Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck relayed a message to a 7-year-old New York girl who wrote a poem titled White Nationalism Put You in Bondage. You want to go to Africa? He said, I will personally purchase your airfare. Beck added, You have to sign a contract that you'll never return to the United States. Said that to a 7-year-old. And Neil Bortz, on his March 31st broadcast of his nationally syndicated radio program, Neil Bortz said that Representative Cynthia McKinney looks like a ghetto slut. Is that comment not every bit as bad as what Don Imus said? Where do you draw the line here? Where was the outrage over that? Imus said he didn't mean the words he said, and I'll admit only he knows that for sure. But the examples I just gave of Coulter and Beck and Bortz and Limbaugh and O'Reilly, they did mean what they said. They don't claim to be comedians like Imus does. Whether he is or not is beside it. They don't claim to be comedians. In fact, I once heard Limbaugh become absolutely livid at the suggestion that he was just a comedian. And while Imus has a legitimate defense when he says he didn't mean what he says, the above examples don't have such a defense, in my opinion. I doubt Imus is going to survive this thing at all. I wasn't a bit surprised last night when MSNBC announced that they were dumping him, and I really believe CBS will dump him as well. But how about the loudmouth haters we're talking about here? Is there any uproar over the words that they've said? Have they been threatened? Have they been heavily criticized by people on the right? We've got Fox News claiming that Imus is on a lefty network, MSNBC. Fox crowed about this louder and longer than anybody else. Do they say anything about Neil Bortz and Limbaugh and Hannity and Coulter and Glenn Beck, the hateful things that they say? Didn't the Vice President of the United States recently go on Limbaugh's show again, giving him more credibility? It does make you wonder. I hold Don Imus absolutely personally responsible for this, his comments, and I support his firing. I must admit, if I had been ahead of the MSNBC network, he probably wouldn't have finished that show that day. I would have had security called in, had him hauled right off the set, had it been me. But in the interest of fairness, and that's what we always try and do on the show, is be fair, why do these right-wingers get away with saying words just as bad as Don Imus said, without any criticism or with very little criticism? Why are they getting what amounts to a free pass? Does anybody know the answer to that? 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. See, the phones are up and running today. We understand that Vonage had a little problem yesterday, but I think we've got that all straightened out. Many things I do want to talk about today. I hope you will participate. One thing I've been wondering, are we seeing a new Watergate happening right in front of our eyes? Is the Department of Justice and Gonzalez and U.S. attorney scandal opening a huge can of worms? I'm told by a couple of insiders at the White House that they've been burning the midnight oil every single night, even over the Easter holiday, to try and find a way to cover up this big mess that they're in. And one thing I want everybody to keep in mind over this U.S. attorney scandal, and there's going to be a whole lot more come of this, but I think a lot of people are missing the point on this. I really believe they are. This whole U.S. attorney scandal is not about who they fired. It's about who they hired. Keep that in mind. You know, the Watergate story so many years ago was about trying to fix an election. An election they didn't even need to fix. It's probably one of the dumbest things that I think I've ever... Well, is the stupidest political move ever, Watergate was. To get involved in that sort of activity when, God knows, they certainly didn't have to. They could have won the election by 20 points without doing anything. And yet they had to try. Typical for the right, isn't it? Typical. If they were going to beat you 80-20, they'd try and go for 85-15. That's just the way they are. Don't just defeat your opponent. Totally destroy them. Don't ever let them get up off the mat. Don't knock them out. Kill them. That's their political philosophy. But I think we're seeing evidence. We're starting to see evidence of a massive, massive cover-up on this Department of Justice mess. We now know that without any doubt, that we've got another Rosemary Woods situation on our hands. Patrick Leahy has accused the Bush aides of lying about their emails. They said they've not been preserved, and I don't believe that, said Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy. He shouted that from the Senate floor today. Said you can't erase emails, not today. They've gone through too many servers. He's absolutely right. The emails are there. They just don't want to produce them. He said they'll subpoena them if necessary. They're hiding something. They're hiding something big. They have broken the law by not doing their correspondence through the White House internet servers, by going through the RNC servers to try and hide the correspondence. There are thousands of emails that might have been lost through the RNC, not actually lost, but lost for the perusal of this committee. They'll never get them unless they find a way to confiscate the machines, the servers from the RNC and the White House and all, and have them searched. They didn't think they'd just hand these things over, did they? I know Leahy knows better than that. They didn't think they'd just hand them over. But now we find out that 22 staffers have email accounts issued by the Republican National Committee. Say there's about 1,000 political appointees in the executive office of the president. Since 2001, about 50 staffers emailed using the system, he said. One former White House staffer told National Journal recently that Rove uses his Republican National Committee email for 95% of his email communications. Does that mean that 95% of Karl Rove's email communications have nothing to do with the White House and therefore are not under the jurisdiction of the law saying that all these things need to be preserved? I kind of doubt it. And one former White House official, Assistant Press Secretary Adam Levine, told the Times that he was issued a private laptop computer, but he found the dual system so cumbersome that he decided to use only his official White House computer. However, Levine recalled seeing White House staff members moving fluidly between their official computers and the laptops provided by the Republican National Committee. So here you go, everybody. Here's a laptop when you want to break the law and run all of your communications through the RNC server so that the public will never know what you've said in your emails, and so that we can run this White House any damn way we want to, within the law or outside of the law. That is what has been done here. You know it. I know it. What are the chances of them, they've come out and said they've lost these emails, thousands of them now. What are the chances of that? Practically nil. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that. What are the chances this administration would tell you the truth on anything nowadays? Slim and none. They don't seem capable of telling the truth about any issue whatsoever. And why would they lie about something seemingly so insignificant as email accounts unless they had something to hide? And once again, we go back to the neocon right-wing logic. When many of us complained about some of the parts of the Patriot Act, you remember how many times they repeated the chorus, how that chorus from the left and the RNC and the neocons all said, oh, if you don't have anything to hide, you don't have anything to worry about. If you're honest and open and you're a good citizen and you're doing everything within the law, you have nothing to hide. Why, you will be fine. And so don't you worry about parts of the Patriot Act that might seem overly oppressive to citizens of the United States. That's what they said. Now let's see them back that up. If they have nothing to hide, why, oh, why would they have found it necessary to run communications, White House communications, through RNC servers Anybody want to answer that question with any kind of a logical answer whatsoever? I can understand it if they wanted to see, you know, contact Aunt Sally and tell her that, we're having Easter dinner this Sunday, and are you bringing the, whatever, are you bringing the glazed ham? I can understand that. But don't tell me that they issued RNC laptop computers to go through RNC servers to White House operatives for little private conversations like that. No, indeed. Those were issued to keep White House communications secret, to keep them away from the public, to keep them away from any oversight, to hide themselves and avoid being prosecuted and investigated for wrongdoing inside the White House. There can be no other reason. And if you know of one, I wish you'd let me know. I would love to know if there's another reason. I don't know one. I can't think of any reason anybody wouldn't have their email inside the White House, back and forth, have it. I mean, I understand them wanting to protect confidential classified information. That's one thing. But they don't have to send classified information over RNC servers, do they? Certainly not. I would think that would be even more dangerous than running it back and forth through the White House system. Now, this doesn't make any sense. Well, yes, it does make sense. It makes sense that they're hiding something. And it makes the sense that this thing is far, far, far bigger than what I think anybody realizes at this time. I think some of the insiders on Capitol Hill have an understanding of just how deep this thing goes. And I think we'll eventually find out that all these attempts by people on the right to slough it off and say, oh, it's a tempest in a teapot. How many times have we heard that? There's nothing to it. The Democrats are just investigating to just, you know, they just want to investigate to cause trouble. That's all this is about. And we'll keep hearing that. We'll keep hearing it because they're desperate to hide all this stuff. And it'll come out. It will come out sooner or later. Let's head on over to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
Listen, I just wanted to add to a point that you were just making. Not only are they not supposed to be going through RNC servers, but it's an incredible security risk. The president and the White House's email communications are supposed to have extra top security measures to protect them from interception. So what they're saying is that they're letting, you know, top secret communications go through the RNC servers that can be accessed by Al-Qaeda or anyone else. I mean, these are the people who are strong on national security. It's an absolute joke.
I'll bet the RNC servers are more secure than the White House's. I wouldn't doubt that a bit.
I wouldn't be surprised either. But, you know, technically, when you think about it, I mean, the president is supposed to have, you know, a system that has top security. And, you know, and if it's going through all these other different sources, you can't guarantee that the security is kept up like that, you know? I mean,
excellent point. I think you're exactly right.
You know, how many people have access to this top secret information going through the RNC server? I mean, is it Karl Rove? Is it the head of the RNC or whatever? I mean, you know, it becomes absurd after a while, you know? And
easy enough for anybody sitting down at the RNC with any knowledge of their system whatsoever to pull out all the information they want and give it to whomever they want.
Yeah, and maybe even top-level national security issues because, you know, we know Cheney has, you know, clearance to everything. We pretty much assume Rove does, too. So they're communicating this over different types of servers, so I think that is a huge security risk. So, again, you know, these people are not for national security or anything like that. They're just the opposite of that.
And, you know, one of the questions is, and again, I think the key to this whole thing is not who was fired. It's who they hired and why, and we'll get to that. But isn't it odd that initially when they talked about giving all the documents they had, here's our email, here's our documents, no mention whatsoever of anything going through any RNC servers or any private laptops given to the insiders by the RNC. No mention of that at all. The Democrats had to ferret that out by themselves.
Oh, well, you know, they'll never admit anything, you know, right offhand. I mean, you know, their truth is always the partial truth. In other words, what have you found out so far, you know? And, you know, I think that they'll push this to the very end. I think those emails will never see the light of day. You know, they've been shredded or gone through triple washing to clean out those servers. So I don't think we'll ever see them. But, you know, I think you're right. I think this was about massive election fraud that was being planned for the next election because, you know, it always comes down to the fact these people, these Republicans, cannot win in a fair fight. That's why they want to rig elections, and that's why they want their judges on the court, because that way you don't have to have the majority vote. You can just have a partisan judge there who's going to rule your way. So these people are completely anti-democracy.
That's what this is all about, and probably the geek squad has been down to the RNC replacing hard drives for the past 2 weeks. They better check it out. Hey, got to move along. Thanks for your call. Good to hear from you. Let's head over here to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, Mike from San Jose.
Hi, Mike.
This IMUS thing to me is the equivalent of Bush saying that if you don't sign the bill the way I want it, the Democrats are responsible for our soldiers dying in Iraq. And the reason I say that is I would have two questions, one each for Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, who once again sat upon the throne this week and beckoned IMUS to approach and beg forgiveness. The question I would have for Jesse Jackson is, how are things going in Hymietown? And the question I would have for Al Sharpton is, in 1995, when a Jewish-owned clothing store moved into New York and displaced a black store owner who was there, and Sharpton went on record as saying, we will not stand by and allow them to move this brother so some white interloper can expand his business. How does he feel about that? I believe both of them are racist, and the fact that we somehow have this ingrained in us in our society that only white people can be racist. And anyone else, it's impossible. It's payback.
Oh, there's plenty of hypocrisy to go around here. There's
but the thing is, it's a parallel to me with everything that's going on in the Bush administration. It's the same kind of thing, and I'm just wondering when we as a country got so frightened and when we got so stupid.
Well, there's plenty of stupidity to go around, that's for certain. Hey, got to move on. Got a break coming up. Thanks for your call. Good call.
Bye.
Yeah, we're not lacking hypocrisy here. We're not lacking stupidity as a nation either. Certainly not. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in a minute with our guest. You'll want to hear this. Believe me, don't go away.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Love your hair, clothes you wear, everything about you takes me there, takes me there. I can't believe my luck is about to change. Oh, wake me up and tell me that I'm dreaming. Baby love, I can't believe you're from above. My life, my gray skies, hello sunshine. Oh, yeah, yeah.
blind romance. Let's give it a try. Come on, come on. Promise you to be true. Cross my heart and hope to die. I can't believe my luck is about to change. Wake me up and tell me that I'm
welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. I promised you an interesting program today, and we're certainly coming through with that today. And right now, it's my pleasure to introduce, and I'll just murder his name. I know I will. His name is Behzad Yapmayan. Am I even close, Behzad?
You're very close.
All right.
You're very close. Yeah.
Right. He was kind enough to tell me earlier today, ladies and gentlemen, that his name has been butchered so many times that he doesn't even listen anymore. So how kind of you. I wonder, everybody knows on our program that we often talk about relations in the Middle East, and particularly at this time, relations that we have with Iran and the dangerous cauldron that we have boiling over there right now. And I thought nobody better to explain it than you. And first of all, I do want to explain that Behzad has a great he's authored Embracing the Infidel, Stories of Muslim Migrants on the Journey West. And he's also a regular over at Tom Dispatch, and we've had Tom Englehart here on the program. And so it was at Tom's suggestion that I call you, and he said nobody could explain Iranian-U.S. relations any better than you. You want to give our listeners a little background on how you've arrived at where you are now with this situation and knowing so much about the relationship between Iran and the U.S.?
Well, I'm a child of the 1953 coup d'etat, the American coup d'etat that overthrew the government, the popular and democratic government of Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh, and brought back to power the Shah of Iran.
And I think you said, if I could interrupt you, I think you made an important, you said an important word there that not a lot of Americans know. You said the popular government.
Yes, it was a very popular government supported by really masses of people, the majority of the population. And I was born a few days after the coup d'etat. I mean, most Americans do not know that the Shah was forced to leave the country before the coup d'etat. Then the Americans intervened, overthrew the government, and brought back the Shah. So my life basically changed, I mean, from the inception, because of the American intervention in Iran. I lost the opportunity of living in a democracy forever. And everything that followed in Iran after that, without a doubt, unquestionably, is a consequence of what happened in August 1953. So I grew up in Iran. I lived in Iran until 1976, when I left to come to the United States to attend graduate school. And while in Iran, I experienced what eventually led to the Iranians revolting against the Shah to overthrow the Shah. Unfortunately, a revolution that led to the coming to power of the fundamentalists. Repeatedly, I would see, for example, my classmates disappear and they would not come back in 2 or 3 months. We knew where they had been taken. We knew that they had been taken away by the Savak, the secret police of the Shah, the secret police that was actually created, supported, and trained by the CIA. Repeatedly, I would see in front of the Tehran University and other major universities, police clashing with the students, attacking them with their batons. I witnessed fear and there to be signs in many homes, including my own home. My father and my family were very much afraid of the Savak and the Shah, so certain things were not ever discussed in our home, in the fear that perhaps somebody would hear, somebody would listen. I mean, the Americans are told a lot of stories of life under the Soviet Union. If they remember those, the life in Iran during the Shah was very much similar.
And this is the wonderful Shah of Iran that was the great friend of many American administrations, right?
Precisely. This is the Shah that Americans supported, brought to power, financed, armed, and used as a very close ally and friend. So for the Iranians, there has always been this collective memory of what America had done to them. Notice, when the Shah was in power, the prison, the very notorious prison that became famous in Iran, called Evin prison, that prison was home to a lot of political activists, communists, nationalists, students, and others who opposed the Shah and the role of the United States in Iran. So the Shah put them in jail because of their opposition to America. When the Shah was overthrown and the new government came to power, the same people and more were put in the same jails, tortured with the same torture tools, and now accused of being supporters of America.
And as somebody a bit older than you, and as somebody who's been politically active and astute in this country for many, many years, I can tell you that during my recollection of all the time since I was cognizant of what was going on, my recollection of what was reported to the people in the United States, there were no stories of Savak. There were no stories circulated in the United States about the CIA and the corruption taking place between them and the Shah. The Shah was held up to be a stand-up guy, a hero.
And after the Iranian Revolution, these stories actually were published, but very quickly they disappeared, and they play no role in the American collective memory.
Right.
They have disappeared. So in Iran, both during the Shah and after the Shah, under the Islamic Republic, Iranians are somewhat hostage to the relationship between Iran and America. They have never been free of that relationship. In the first 25 years, they were tortured, put in jail for opposing America. In the next 28 years, they were tortured, put in jail for supposedly, allegedly, being supporters of America. So that has created a type of schizophrenic and a convoluted situation in Iran that really explains much of the stuff that has been happening. And I should also explain that the Iranians, although they are very resentful of political interventions of the United States in Iran, they're also very modern people in the sense that they embrace the cultural elements that the United States and the West represent in the world. Most of the Iranians listen to Western music, would like very much to see Western movies, and they do actually have access to Western movies that are bootlegged and presented in Iran even before they are commercially released in the United States. They are modern people. They read Western literature as well as Iranian literature, and for the most part, they are not the followers of the Islamic Republic. They resent what the Islamic Republic has done to them. They resent the fact that the Islamic Republic had hijacked the revolution against the Shah and the Shah's dependence on the West.
Well, and yet we have been told and propagandized in this country for many, many years that, especially during the Bush administration now, that this is a clash of cultures. This whole thing is taking place because they hate us because of our Western culture, when in fact Western culture by the modern people in Iran is generally accepted, right? Just like you said.
Very much accepted. And on the question of this being the clash of civilizations, the clash of cultures, I mean, far from it. Even the small group in Iran, there is a group that supports the government. It's a fraction of the population, small fraction of the population. If I wanted to put a number on that, I would say like maybe 4 million, 5 million that support the government. And not necessarily because of the government's Islam and its opposition to the Western culture, but because of many, many other factors. But even among those, this does not represent a clash of cultures and clash of civilizations. Many people in Iran and the Middle East are opposed to the United States not because of the Western culture, but because of very clear orientation of American foreign policy, especially in the past 30 years or so in the Muslim world. It's unquestionable opposition to countries that have been trying to live their own life. It's unconditional support for Israel, and it's repeated interventions in different parts of the region. The Iranians do remember Iran-Iraq war, the 8 years, devastating 8 years of war between Iran and Iraq, in which the United States willingly and knowingly aided Iraq, supported intelligence to the Iraqi army about the movement of the Iranian forces at the time that it knew quite well that the Iraqis would use nerve gas against the Iranians.
So what would the average modern Iranian say is the motive for the United States acting in such a way toward Iran?
The average Iranian would say that the United States has a motive to dominate the region, and it has close ties with Israel, so a part of the intervention is due to that. But for the most part, it's domination, it's economics.
Yes.
It's gains from oil. I mean, this is a commonly acknowledged fact.
Right.
The facts in the past few years have only verified that.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you, and there's such ignorance in this country, I'm not amongst my audience, but so many people have the idea that Iran and the whole Middle East, like every place is like Afghanistan. If you could take a moment or two and tell us, in Tehran, for example, what kind of a city is Tehran and how do the people live here? I live there. I think so many people think everybody lives in mud huts and with dirt streets.
Good question. Tehran is New York City without the bars and nightclubs.
Uh-huh.
Those are banned. In every other way, it is a New York City. The buildings resemble New York City high-rises. Modern high-rises have been going up in the past 20 years under the Islamic Republic. There are highways, throughways. There are cars, I mean, numerous pollution. There is noise. Tehran is a city of 16 million. There are no mud houses either in Tehran or most of the rest of Iran. They don't exist. They may exist in remote villages, some of the remote villages. There is poverty in Iran. There is poverty in Kurdistan, in Baluchistan, some of the provincial parts of Iran. But big cities, especially in Tehran, which is really the heart of the country, there is none of that. There is poverty, but no mud houses. That image that I know quite well does exist in the West. So life in Iran resembles life very much, like life in the United States. People get up, go to offices. Some of the offices are extremely modern looking. They have the state-of-the-art technology. They work really hard. They come back home, and they do all sorts of stuff that people in New York would do. They visit family and friends. They watch television, and they drink alcohol clandestinely at home, not in bars and restaurants. Those who have money go to restaurants. Some go to movies. There is all sorts of music that is no longer clandestine, available all over the country, available in people's homes. So very much, and especially the young Iranians, have access more or less to everything that is available in the West and the rest of the world. And they live a life very much similar to life in New York and elsewhere in the United States.
Well, our press has done such a poor job of educating people about Iran, very definitely. So we're in this mess. We've got a possible confrontation coming up. We hope not. What can be done, in your opinion? And you've been back to Iran. What can be done to rectify this situation? Is it hopeless? Can the Iranian people and American people be educated enough about each other to maybe talk to their governments and say, hey, it doesn't have to be this terrible confrontation that may lie ahead?
I mean, I have to be honest with you. Some days I have absolutely no hope. There are other days that I think there may be some hope. So I am really speaking to you out of extreme despair and fear. Can they learn about each other, the people, to stop their governments from doing this? I think for the most part, what needs to be done has to happen in the United States, not Iran. Iran
despite all the brutality and repressive nature of the Islamic Republic, is in fact in a defensive mode. It is not aggressive. It is not doing what the United States is claiming to, that Iran is doing. So really, what needs to be done is here. The American people should force the government, and here by the government, I don't mean the Republicans, because the Republicans have a different mindset. The American people should actually pressure the Democrats that promised them they would change the course. They came to office with a promise. It is really the Democrats that can stop the possibility of war in Iran, against Iran. And the American people should use all they can to pressure the elected Democrats in the Congress to force them to understand that they don't want war. That can happen through protests. It could happen through letter-writing campaigns. It could happen through boycotting schools. It could happen through work stoppage. There are many venues that are available in a democracy that are not available in a country like Iran. Protesters in Iran will disappear. They will go to jail. But at least up to this point, American protesters do not disappear. So it's really the responsibility of the Americans to become more responsible, to become more proactive, to understand what their actions or the lack of actions mean for the rest of the people in the world. And that's what I tell my students also when I talk to them, that it is their responsibility. This is the largest, the most powerful country in the world. What happens here has an impact on everyone. We cannot sit on the sideline and watch what is happening.
I agree. Another point I wanted to bring up is now we're hearing about Iran's nuclear capability and their desire to produce a weapon. In the West, I think it's a common belief. It's not true, but it's a common belief that the Iranians in very recent years have started this nuclear program. That's not true. It was started clear back in Eisenhower's term, was it not, to share nuclear technology?
Yes, the Americans actually, in a sense, pressured the Iranians that they have to have that.
Yeah.
So this is such a lie. I mean, the Americans have been supporting Iran's nuclear ambition. They gave it the technology. When the Shah was overthrown, of course, the Iranians stopped the process because they were engaged in a war. And once the war was over, they went back to it again. And on that, of course, I am also pretty much sure that the Iranians do have the desire of developing bomb-making possibilities and technology. Yes, that is true. But even that, in my opinion, is a defensive measure.
Well, yes, I agree with you. It is a defensive measure. They would be insane to try and use it as an offensive. They would guarantee the destruction of their country if they ever use it in an offensive fashion. So,
the reason they want that is because of the threat that they feel.
Certainly.
Yeah.
What's the answer? We've got this flotilla over there now, aircraft carriers ready at the ready. How close are we to a problem? And can Ahmed, I pronounce his name wrong all the time, Ahmadinejad. What's the situation with him? What do you hear from your friends? Is he respected at all? Is he this crazy person that our government would have us believe?
Well, he's respected by some, disrespected by many. He lost his popularity because of his inability to deliver. He came to office promising to deliver economic goods, to deliver, to change the economic conditions, to create jobs, to improve people's standard of living. He did not. In return, instead of that, he's been on this rampage internationally, making declarations that have further and further and further isolated Iran and hurt Iran. So the Iranians, the population, as well as important sections within the conservative groups in Iran, are actually opposed to him. They resent what he's doing.
Do the clerics hold power over him?
Some do, some do not. He is affiliated with some strong clerics. But there are others who are equally strong that oppose him. Iran is a divided country. There is division between the people and the government. There is division within the government between the reformists and the conservatives. And there is numerous emerging divisions within the conservative camp. So we don't have one voice in Iran, which makes it difficult. That is very true. Are we close to a catastrophe? We can be, because anything could go wrong now. In a situation like this, any mistake could lead to devastation and catastrophe. And I still repeat, really the key to the problem, solving the problem, is in the United States.
Well, the problem is we don't speak with one voice here. As you well know, there is approximately 30% of this country that, if given the choice, would drop nuclear weapons and attack Iran right now.
Yeah.
What percentage is there in Iran that would be willing to be proponents of a war with the United States?
I really don't think that percentage is up to 30 at all. It's much less than that.
I would hope
much
not.
Much less than that. Much less than that. Iranians know they're going to lose. There is no victory for Iran in this war. What it brings, Americans may not win either. But at the very least, the Iranians will lose a lot. I think the majority of the Iranian population understands that. There is nothing in the war for the Iranians.
Well, it doesn't seem to be. You've been an American citizen for quite a while now, right?
Yes.
Any desire to go back there and teach?
I cannot go to Iran. I'm a political exile. But I very much long to go back to be with my family, friends, and relatives who I'm never going to see. People are getting old and they're disappearing. I'm not going to see them. I miss the mountains that are surrounding Tehran. I miss the neighborhoods. I miss the streets. I miss the smell of Tehran like anybody else. I grew up in Tehran. Tehran was a big part of my life. I cannot return. So I do have the dream to go back. And I have the fear that what is happening now will shatter that dream, that I would never be able actually to realize that. And that fear is actually a very profound and powerful fear. I have recurring nightmares these days. And I'm not the only one. Many Iranians sitting here have those nightmares. The nightmares that one day they would get up and hear the news that their home was bombed and devastated.
You said one thing there that I picked out that I think a lot of listeners would be very surprised at. There are, you said you missed the mountains around Tehran. I think a lot of people think it's sitting out in the desert. There are spectacular snow-covered mountains, snow-covered peaks around Iran or Tehran, right?
Beautiful peaks. And I went to Iran. The last time I visited Iran was 1998-99, and I was there during the Khatami's government. And, it was wonderful. Twice a week, three times a week, my friends and I would go to the mountains. And on Fridays, which is the day off in Iran, the mountains are so crowded that it's actually difficult to walk. The trails are full of people. And there are beautiful cafes, gorgeous cafes with beautiful trees that serve tea and serve food for those who are hiking in the mountains. So mountains are very much a part of the everyday life for the Tehranis.
I can hear a pain in your voice. I can hear that when you talk about your homeland, that you do miss your family and that you are feeling very much sorrow over the situation that we have right now. How about you? Personally, here in this country, do you suffer any in this country by our citizens giving you any trouble because you're from Iran?
Not at all by the citizen, but very much by the government. Anytime I enter the country, I'm interrogated like a criminal. Really, right. Seriously. The last time I came here was a month ago. I went to Canada to visit a friend. And on the way back, I just happened to take the bus, and I should not have done that. I was treated truly like someone who had committed the most severe crime. I was yelled at, shouted at. I was asked questions that nobody else was asked. And when I sat on the bus, when all of this ordeal was over, I sat there. I was furious. I had anger all over me. And repeatedly, any time I come here, day after day, time after time, I'm treated like that. So after a point, you begin asking questions. You cannot go back to your place of birth because of the political problems. You've chosen this country as your home. You're a citizen of the country, yet you are not treated as an equal. You're treated like a criminal when you enter. So you ask yourself the question, where is home? Is there a home for a person like me? And I've been dealing with that question. The feeling of homelessness amidst whatever I have has been very profound and strong in me.
Well, you've had some of those feelings since birth.
Yes.
Yeah, always the people of Iran have been on the wrong side of, what a tough situation to be in. You for a while you had a choice between a dictatorship and a theocracy, the brutality of the Khomeinis and the Shah. It seems like at times when you think about the whole situation, there was no way for the people of Iran to win.
That's exactly the case. And that is precisely the very sorrowful situation, that there is no end to this conflict for the Iranians. And really the end, at least partially the end, will come if there is peace between the United States and Iran.
Well,
and I think a large number of Iranians are looking forward to that. The end of animosity between the two countries.
Well, I hope that can happen. There's a lot of work to be done. I hope cool heads prevail and we can talk. That certainly would be a start, to sit down and talk. Reasonable people talk about their problems, and that's we have to convince our government that would be the thing to do. Bizan, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. You've been a great guest and explained some things so very well that are not common knowledge. And we'd like to have you again on in the future, if you don't mind.
It would be my pleasure. It was great. I'm leaving country on May 27th for 2 years, so the cell phones are available.
Okay. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Sure. Bye-bye. Thank you for inviting me. Bye.
Very interesting man. Behzad Yapmayan. As you could tell, he knows the story, both in Iran and in this country, and has a wonderful understanding of what needs to be done. It's a tragic story. I get very frustrated when I talk about the United States relations with the people on the right. And, let's go bomb those sons of bitches. Let's turn it into glass. Let's do this. Let's do. They think that they're all a bunch of heathens. They think they're all a bunch of people riding camels out in the, and as he mentioned, talked about Tehran. It's like New York City. The people there, they're regular people. They're not some third world country. This isn't a bunch of idiots we're dealing with here. These are civilized people with a fabulous history and culture behind them. And he dispelled that myth that the Bush administration does their utmost to propagate every single day that, well, it's a clash of cultures. It is not a clash of cultures. They want to make it a clash of cultures. Oh, they hate us for our freedom. They do not hate us for our freedom. They want their own freedom. And there are few civilized countries on this earth that have had more trouble getting freedom for their people than Iran. We just talked to a man here that since he was born, Mossadegh was overthrown by the CIA. He was a much beloved leader of their country. They put in the Shah of Iran, who, as you all well know, in this country, most of the people of this country thought, oh, the Shah. Oh, look, his queen or whatever they called her. Oh, they're such wonderful people. And you always saw him. He's a guest here at the White House. And, oh, what wonderful relation. And this was a brutal, brutal dictator, a horrible man. And yet look at how he was portrayed here in the United States, simply because our government wanted influence in that area of the world. We were willing to take a brutal, horrible man and put him on a pedestal to the people of the United States and to other people around the world and promote him as some sort of a great guy. When in fact he was as brutal a dictator as Saddam Hussein was, he was. And yet, I feel bad for the people of Iran. I really do. They had that to contend with. When they got rid of him, they had Khomeini. And on the other part of the scale, in one way, just as bad. So those people have been oppressed for 60 years. And the United States has had a hand in it. And I'm ashamed of that fact. Well, coming up after the top of the hour, we're going to have none other than Jeff Allen Wolf with us. And I'm looking forward to that. We're going to have a good time, I'm sure. And we hope you'll all stay tuned for that. I'm sure you will. You will, won't you? You're not going anywhere. No, you're not. Certainly not. So you listened here to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And we'll be back right after the news. Y'all come back now, you hear?
suicide bomber struck the, this is the Quality News Network, a suicide bomber struck the highly fortified Green Zone in Baghdad, killing 8 and wounding 20. The attack occurred in the Parliament Building cafeteria as the lawmakers went to lunch. It's unclear how the bomber made it through the multiple checkpoints. No Americans were killed in the blast. Earlier, at least 10 were killed when a truck bomb exploded on a major bridge in northern Baghdad. The Al-Sarafiya Bridge is a main east-west artery crossing the Tigris River and was blown up just before morning rush hour. Among the dead are 4 Iraqi policemen who drowned when their car plummeted into the river. World leaders are condemning yesterday's suicide bombings in Algiers that killed at least 33 and wounded more than 200. Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility. The Algerian authorities have promised a tough response. Iran says it is only in the early stages of uranium enrichment. Mohammed El-Baradei, the head of the International Atomic Agency, said Iran has only 100 centrifuges and not the 1,000 needed for industrial production. Tehran says its nuclear program is peaceful despite Western claims of it being used for the development of weapons. In Tokyo, Japanese and Chinese leaders are meeting to forge a stronger regional alliance. Representatives announced they will work together on environmental and energy projects and on disarming North Korea's nuclear weaponry program. U.S. and South Korean authorities are pressuring North Korea to honor its agreement and begin dismantling its main nuclear plant by Saturday. The U.S. released frozen funds to Pyongyang yesterday, which should have begun the nuclear disarmament process. North Korea said it would need an additional 30 days to do so. In Kiev, Ukrainian President Viktor Yushchenko has temporarily suspended his order to dissolve parliament and hold May elections. His earlier decree sparked nationwide protest. Yushchenko says he will allow parliament more time to prepare for the upcoming vote. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has kidnapped BBC journalist Alan Johnston is safe. In a meeting with BBC head Mark Thompson, Abbas said he has credible proof the reporter who was abducted in the Gaza Strip last month is alive and well. There has been no contact with the reporter since his capture. 400 foreign fighters who came to Bosnia-Herzegovina during the Bosnian War have lost their citizenship rights. Most are from the Islamic States, and the Balkan media characterizes the move as one motivated by the U.S. war on terror. An independent panel headed by 2 former secretaries of the Army has issued a blistering report of conditions at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center. The report cites insufficient training, overworked staff, and a serious lack of leadership for the failings of the center. This is the Quality News Network.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press, How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
Researchers are using computer games to test the mental abilities of apes. Bernas and his mom Madhu, 2 Sumatran orangutans at Zoo Atlanta, are playing video games on a computer touchscreen while scientists study their cognitive skills. Zoo officials hope the exhibit will raise awareness to the diminishing orangutan population. The Senate today voted to relax restrictions on the federally funded stem cell research. Despite the president's promise of a veto, the 63-34 vote is just short of the margin needed to pass the bill over presidential opposition. The measure would allow funding for embryonic stem cells regardless of when the cells were created. Biotech firm Genentech has posted a 68% increase in quarterly profits and record-setting revenues. With 10 popular drugs on the market and a quarterly profit of $706 million, Genentech is now the world's largest capitalized biotech company. The 2007 median price of existing homes will drop for the first time since the late 1960s. That's the prediction from the National Association of Realtors. The group also expects sales to drop on new and existing homes. The association blames the problems with subprime mortgage lending and stricter lending practices. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.40 a barrel, and the Dow at this hour is up 46 points. The NASDAQ is up 17, and the S&P 500 is up 6. You can always log on and find more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Jay Galley.
Thank you.
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad you stayed with us through the news. I didn't find anything earth-shattering about the news today, but you know, if it's not about Ann Nicole Smith or the paternity suit or what else, or about Don Imus, I mean, how important could it be? That's kind of the way it's been lately, right? And I'm guilty about the Don Imus thing. I've talked about it quite a bit. Hopefully, that saga will all be over with, and we won't have to talk about it anymore. That'd be just fine with me. Right now, I promised you that I'd have an important guest with us. And we've got the one and the only Jeff Allen Wolf with us. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank God there's only one of these. We'd be in trouble. By the way, you said no breaking news. I do have something to bring to your show. I just came across this while you were doing your intro to your second hour.
Uh-huh.
Al-Qaeda number 3 admitted to stealing the emails that were lost by the White House. I needed to get that to your table there. You know something? I'm laughing and you're laughing, but wouldn't that be funny?
The only thing is, Jeff, I happen to know, and the reason I know this is because our government has reported it to us, that Al-Qaeda number 3 has been killed 16 times so far.
Yeah, oh, hold on. I have 14. I got a research that I don't have. He's been killed more times than that guy on the talk show, the guiding light that keeps coming back. Roger, he dies, and every year.
I quit the guiding light that's one of those shows every day when my mother would come home in the afternoon and turn on the guiding light. And my God, what were some of those other shows?
Actually, the one that I got addicted, I don't want to get far off of our field, but the one that I...
No, this is what I wanted to talk about was soap operas.
Thanks a lot, take me away from political, was Dark Shadows.
I never saw that one.
I was a big Dark, because it was corny, it was crazy. For those of you Dark Shadow fans out there listening on the Guy James Show, you know what I'm talking about. It was werewolves and vampires. It was
really
a soap opera setting. It was a soap opera setting, and it was videotaped. And it was fascinating, you know.
Well, I missed out. I mean,
Kate Jackson was in there, so she was the nanny.
Oh.
So it was a, you know, a science fiction before its time type of thing. But anyways, I'm weird. Yeah.
I completely missed out on that one. I think I've heard of it. But As the World Turns and, gosh, I can't even think of the name of Lobb anymore. I think most of them are gone. I don't know for sure.
Oh, my God, he's back again. Yes, you do have cancer. No, it's not your baby. Those were all the names of the shows. What disease can we come up this week?
Yeah, and they were all doctors, and the women all dressed in their finest clothes every day, even to sit around the house.
Well, actually, the big one that I was addicted to, honestly, over the years, was Peyton Place.
Oh, yeah.
And Peyton Place was to me, one of the most fascinating soap operas. But, hey, it shows you how crazy my tastes are and everything. But
yeah, well, it is Peyton Place. I haven't even seen any reruns of those shows. I don't know.
I got enough to TiVo stuff, Guy. Don't give me stuff to look up reruns. I'm TiVoing some of the old stuff that I, you know, used to like.
Oh, you're into that fancy technology.
Oh, you kidding? Oh, without TiVo, I could not. I can't watch my Laker games. I'm a big Lakers fan, but it's not fair to my girlfriend, Natasha, to come home and what's on? A Laker game. So what I do is I tape it. We have dinner. We watch all of our stuff we like. When she goes to sleep, 11 o'clock at night, I turn on the TiVo and I watch 2.5 hours till 1:30 in the morning and I watch my Lakers game.
I see.
So it's a tape delay. You know, it's nothing wrong. I put the headphones on. It's weird screaming silently, though. I've learned how to scream silently.
Are they any good anymore?
The headphones are great. I mean, it's connected. It's not a wireless.
No, device. Are the Lakers any good?
Oh, I thought you were asking.
Is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar still with them?
God.
I don't. I kind of lost.
No. Guy, they lost 8 out of their last 9. They're in 7th place. They have 3 games left. And I don't want to get into that. They're on the verge of not making the playoffs.
Okay.
Bryant is great, but Kareem's not there. Kareem is a coach right now.
I dropped out of professional sports a long time ago.
And by the way, George Bush is president, just in case you're not.
I knew that part. I knew that part.
You got the political down well, Guy, but you don't have the sports world down.
I live in a cave. All I get is political news in on the teletype every day, and that seems to be about it. Jeff, you do a three-hour show every day. Your ear is to the railroad track politically and all, and you keep close track of talk radio as I do. First of all, did you hear about this? Is not big news, and I'm sure you heard about it, about Lionel taking over for Sam Seder on
Airbnb. Yes, I did. Yes.
I've only heard Lionel a few times, but I'm somewhat surprised at that this so-called progressive liberal network is headed that direction. But we shall see.
I have a lot of feedback on that as we get into our discussion, but yes, I heard the news on that.
What do you think? Where do you think liberal radio is going right now? How do you feel about it?
Boy, I'm going to tick off a lot of people who are listening to this
show. Oh, please do.
So, let me preface this, and then I'll get into what I want to talk about from my viewpoint. This is no disrespect to anybody listening to your show or any of my listeners, but I'm going to call some people some names, and if it fits and you get upset, then, hey, it applies to you. If it doesn't, let it roll off your back. Simply.
Okay, I'll just sit here and watch the numbers go down. Go right ahead.
I think in several areas. Number one, the lack of support. I'm going to jump around. We can get into this each individual issue. There's a prevailing thought pattern that terrestrial radio is the only thing to report on, and that bothers me. And the reason why it bothers me, obviously, is I'm doing an Internet show, a stream show, just like you are, just like Mark is, just like Bob Kincaid is, just like all the other streamers, not just the Head On Network, but people like ours. There are not many Nova. There are not many Head On Radio networks, obviously. And Mike Malloy streams his show, and et cetera. But we need to get past this thing that when we report in all of these columns and all of these websites, and I know you have a fabulous guest coming on later, does a great website, but we have this attitude that terrestrial radio is the only thing to talk about. Perfect example. There's a group called nonstopradio.com. I gave them a plug on my show. They're worth checking into. They fight the fight anytime a progressive station goes down and there is a liberal voice lost in a particular city or state in the United States. They come to the cause and try to rally the troops to get that station back on or get another liberal talk station. They're fighting the fight on our side. But they themselves talk about only terrestrial radio. And people can easily tune into Internet radio in front of their computer. And now with all of these new radio devices coming out, you now can go wireless and walk around your house with a receiver. You could be in your car. You could be on the yard. You could be listening to the Guy James Show, the Bob Kincaid Show, the Mark Levine Show, my show, etc. You don't need to be tied to your computer. So we got Nonstop Radio to put a page up for Head On Radio, a link. So as of now, if you go to Nonstop Radio on the front page, there will be a link to alternative sources besides terrestrial radio. The WW whatever, you know, WWZ on Y in Boston and QMC, you know, the typical that we're used to as we grew up. Now you see the Guy James Show listed, Jeff Allen Wolf Show listed. My point being this, if we can get people out of that mentality, that tunnel vision, that Internet radio is not as viable as terrestrial radio. The future is Internet radio, not XM, not Sirius, but Internet stream. We are on the cutting edge of this. This is just as viable a market. This is the preface I'm going to set up why I think progressive radio doesn't get the support that it should. That's the first step. To realize Internet radio is important, the only difference, and even your guest is coming up from, I believe, Talking Radio website, said on his webpage that the only difference between shows like your show or my show or Bob Kincaid or other people who stream is we don't have syndication. We don't have the big numbers. We don't have millions of people listening to us. Your show is just as viable as Randy Rose, as Al Franken's was, as Tom Hartman was. You discuss the same issues. So do I. You're different from Bob. Bob is different from me. Mark Levine is different from, you know, you, etc. We all have our different styles. But we're all viable progressive talk show hosts. So that's step number one, realizing Internet stream radio, progressive radio is just as important. Number two, getting the website and the bloggers to push the Internet stream radio and not keep talking about the same five hosts. Now, I'm going to qualify this. I love Randy Rose. I love Mike Malloy. I love Tom Hartman. I used to love Al Franken. not on anymore. Like Peter B. Werbian, Peter B. Collins, Peter Werbian, Peter B. Collins, etc. Bill Press, Stephanie Miller. They're all wonderful. They're legends. They're icons. But you know what? That's great. That's great. But guys, there are other people out there like you and I knocking ourselves around looking for the same support that they get. And the only difference, I've said to you privately and I've said on the phone to other talk show hosts, people just don't know that we exist. So how do we get past that point? How do we progress with liberal talk radio to make it more viable? And please jump in at any time, okay?
Well, I think I wanted to jump in a minute ago, but you're on such a good roll. I'm sitting here going, amen,
well,
brother.
Let me finish up one, and I want to get your feedback off on this. Here's the thing. I have encouraged a lot of people around the United States and in websites and blogs. You know, look, I'm not knocking Malloy, Hartman, or whatever. Love them. I'm going to be going to the Novem birthday bash this weekend. I'm not part of Novem. I'm not invited as a guest. I'm not crashing the party, but I mean, I'm coming as a listener and introduce myself to them and meet these people and let them know, you know, we're with the Head On Network, etc. But it frustrates me that the only thing people seem to be talking about is the same stations in their local city. If it's Boston or San Diego or wherever, they go, hey, did you hear we lost a station in L.A.? Guy James' show is on. Bob Kincaid's show is on. Jeff Allen Wolf's show is on. Mark Levine's show is on, and others. Hello, we're just out there also. We're not just sitting here as amateurs sitting in the thing. And not, by the way, and I didn't bring up John Fox or Joe Vecchio, not because they're not a viable show. I'm talking about professional broadcasters who have a background such as you and Mark and myself and Bob who've done the business for a while. Great shows, John. Great show, Joe. But I'm versing it versus the Malloys and the Hartmans. We need the community, the people who are the bloggers, the people who are saying we need to balance the seat against the conservative right with the progressive left. Start talking about our shows. Start, not just our shows, but other progressive people who are on the Internet. Start pushing those shows, pointing people to those shows. You know what will happen, Guy? If they like the show, they'll stay with it. If the show sucks and the host stinks, they won't stay with it. But at least point the people to the show and give them the chance to listen to the show and let them know that we exist. And I'll end that point right there, and I have other points.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And you know, the first point you made about it being a viable medium now, certainly the terrestrial radio people understand this. The people who own and operate terrestrial radio, more and more and more, they're streaming their programs. More and more and more, they're offering their programs for podcasts. So they understand that this medium is important, and it's becoming more important, or you wouldn't see that coming from any of them. Most of the major stations now are streaming their programs, and they're not doing it for the hell of it. They're doing it because
they have to compete with shows like ours who are potentially going to get a piece of the market, and they want to jump into this technology. They have the shows. They say, oh, we better not lose out on this futuristic technology of reaching millions of people around the world.
And the sad part about it is, and we've talked to station owners around the country, and you probably have as well, we have the technology now. We don't need to do satellite hookups to link in with terrestrial radio. We can do it on the internet now. I mean, it's so simple. The technology is coming along nicely. But, you know, these people aren't stupid. The people at Clear Channel and Meridian and some of the other ones I can think of, no, they're starting to use the same medium we are, and they're doing it for a reason because they know that's where the future is.
Continuing on with this, the other point that I wanted to add to this also is the Democratic group. And this, like I said, I'm going to piss some people off. I'm going to challenge the listeners. I'm going to challenge the website writers out there, challenge your guests coming up, all the people to talk about viable shows like ours and other networks who are streaming, who are not part of a Nova M or not part of an Air America or not part of a syndicate or syndicated national radio, you know, terrestrial station where you drive to and go to the station, but more of the independent stations like ours, is that it's easy for the GOP conservative host to be in bed with the GOP politicians. The politicians on that side of the aisle support the hell out of those shows because it's talking points of what they want to get across politically. We, personally, I won't say you or anybody else, I won't speak for Bob or you, but I'm sure we've come across the same blockade that if we try to let senators and congressmen and others know to, hey, come on our show, we've got a good following. We may not have millions, but we have a good following. Talk about the issues. They don't seem to either, A, get it, that the medium is just as important, B, care that we're doing what we're doing to talk about the Democratic progressive side, or whatever the issue is, they just don't want to deal with it.
I think not getting it is the main thing. I've discussed this with them in meetings in D.C. over, you know, the meetings for progressive radio, and I use that term because that's what they call it. I'm a liberal, but many times have sat in meetings, and one not so long ago, that they act like they get it, they talk like they get it, but again, they're politicians, and I don't think they actually do get it. They don't understand the importance here, and they don't understand what a tool this could be for them. The Republicans have understood it for a long, long time, but the Democrats just haven't gotten on board yet at all.
Fourth point I wanted to add to the table is this is where I'm going to probably tick off some listeners, and I'm qualifying it again for.
All right, let me get my helmet here.
it's not as damaging as it sounds. It's just a challenge. A lot of times when I used to do shows, internet streamed, I would see the listeners who supported the shows, such as your show, my show, etc., and all they could talk about is the terrestrial radio shows. And they would talk about what they heard on so and so show, and what they heard on so and so show, and then Malloy's show and Hartman's show. Yet our listeners are supposed to be talking about what they heard on our show and having a debate, and they kind of leave us out of the loop. And I'm putting this in a delicate way, that it would be nice that if they started paying attention more to the shows that they're listening to in the forums or the chat rooms or the blogs or et cetera that are specific for that station, whether it be Head On, whether it be the Guy James website, whether it be the Jeff Allen Wolf website. There's nothing wrong with talking about other hosts, but it's kind of like inviting you to my house for a party, and then you're talking about the person next door and how beautiful their home is, if that analogy fits anywhere.
Yeah, it does. It does fit.
And it's insulting because we're sitting there putting on a three-hour show, and, you know, kind of like address what we talked about. If you disagreed with us, say it. If you agree with us, say it. But to leave us out of the equation completely and say, ooh, I'm going to go tune into what Hartman's doing, or I'm going to go tune into what Malloy's doing, and we're on the air, it's kind of like, hello?
Right.
What's the point of supporting the show or the network if you won't discuss and interact? And that's why I'm going to be ticking some people off, calling some listeners lazy. We are interrelated. We're unrelated islands, the progressive side. A lot of people out there who love progressive talk, who love what we're trying to change this country because of George Bush in 6 years, but we don't coordinate together our efforts to make a difference. And I think that's why we lose elections, Guy.
Oh, coordination is exactly right. The right has done such a great job. I congratulate them on that. They've perfected it, and we're still babes in the woods when it comes to coordination between all of our groups, our political action groups, and our activist groups that we have out here. And you're so right. You're so right, Jeff. It just frosts my gourd every time I pick up an issue of Talkers Magazine. Now that's kind of like the industry Bible
for magazine.
And they come out with their Heavy 100 once a year, and it's all terrestrial radio. Well, damn it, we exist too, and I would challenge anybody. In that Heavy 100 to come up with more content, better content, more honest content than we have on some of our shows on our network. There's some of those shows, and I'm not putting out sour grapes here. I know for a fact that a lot of people in that Heavy 100 aren't as good. Those shows aren't as good as some of them we have on our own little network right here.
And on top of that, Guy, they have a huge staff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Staff of a half a dozen or 20 or so, and I'll put together the most kick-ass show in the world. Perfect example, though, what I'm talking about, lazy, and this, like I said, I'm trying to be very delicate here. Your phone line should be ringing off the hook now. Should be ringing off the hook to jump in and talk about progressive liberal radio. I know you didn't throw out the numbers. I know you didn't ask for the calls, but this should be an automatic. You shouldn't get the same four or five people calling. You should get a lot of different callers who want to be part of the dialogue. And the silent majority out there just go, well, we want progressive talk radio. We want it to survive. Did you call into the show? No. Did you comment on the show? No. Did you write to the show? No. Did you donate and help or try to? No. Did you spread the word? No. So how can you bitch and complain that you want progressive radio to stay on the air, yet you won't do anything to help it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I said I'm walking the fine line of ticking people off. It's not a specific. It's a generalization of our side of the aisle. Talk's a good game, but we don't walk the talk.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it frustrates me. And I don't have phone lines, so I can't say that. But email should pour in. phone calls should pour in on your show. When you have a topic, you shouldn't be sitting there trying to stretch and fill with other topics while waiting. There should be at least 20 per hour calling in. For your two-hour show, you'd have 40 calls a day, and easily, because you have the audience out there. But they just don't get inspired enough for whatever reason. They don't feel it's important enough, and they don't realize this is important to keep shows like yours on, mine on, Bob's on, the Head on Radio Network, et cetera. Not just our network, but anybody who's doing what you and I are doing, there's no difference. I challenge anyone to say that you are any different than Mike Malloy, Tom Harp, Al Franken, and that Bob is any different than those people, and I am any different. Different styles.
Right.
Different voice quality. Different patterns or pitch or pacing. Same issues, same energy, same professionalism. Where's the support?
And you're so right about the staff. I don't mean to whine and complain here, but my God, the time that goes in just to doing one show, because director, producer, researcher, the whole ball of wax.
Exactly.
It's you don't just sit down every day, because when you do sit down and you sit in this chair, or you sit in Studio 19 in that chair, when you come on and say something, you got to know that what you're saying is right and correct and been properly researched. And all of that takes time.
Exactly. And I rely, like I said, on emails. I don't get the feedback and phone lines, the luxury of hearing people say and helping me fill out the time. Unfortunately, I have to do the 3 hours. That's what I've chosen to do right now. But like I said, phone lines should be ringing right now. People should be weighing in on Progressive Liberal Talk Radio on your station right now.
Well, evidently,
on your show right now.
Evidently they're listening.
Well, that's good. Hopefully they're enjoying, but
they're,
hopefully when you open up the phone lines, they should weigh in and jump in and give their 2 cents of why these shows are not known all around the world, not just with our great listeners. I know the amount of listeners I have. You know the amount of listeners you have. And it's not a small amount, but it's not huge like it should be, like a Malloy or Hartman, et cetera, just because nobody pushes the envelope on the websites and blogs to let people know. Check them out. You don't like them, don't listen. But
I guess they'd rather hear mattress commercials and snake oil commercials for 20 minutes out of every hour. Here.
Well, that's my challenge, like I said, to the listeners and to the writers of the blogs and the websites. You all do a wonderful job, but I challenge you to start putting your focus now on internet-streamed radio shows that are quality, and stop worrying about the terrestrial radio. They don't need any more help. They've got the syndicated contract. They're on 90 to 200 stations. They've got hundreds of thousands of listeners. You need to help the people who are busting their backside, like you and Bob and others, who are making the difference, the grassroots shows that are quality. And I challenge them to write about it in their articles, write about it, do interviews, write about it on the website, and to call into a show when the phone lines open up, when people ask for emails or help financially, if they can. Donate for the cause, or write an email, at least let you know that you're out there.
Hey, I told you he'd have plenty to say. Jeff, we got to do this again soon, and we will do this again soon.
On a different topic, hopefully, on a political issue.
All right.
I'd love to. I appreciate your time, Guy, and have a good rest of the show. I'll be listening.
Jeff Allen Wolf, everybody. See you later, Jeff.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, yeah. We're heading off to a break. There you've had your lessons from the both of us, your lectures and the whole thing about what we need to do about liberal and progressive radio and internet radio. Great programming here on the Head on Radio Network. I'm proud of it. Jeff's proud of it. Bob's proud of it. The whole gang is. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away. back with you here on the Guy James Show. Great to hear from Jeff today. And as promised, our weekly segment coming up right now with Bruce from TalkingRadio.blogspot. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hey, Guy, how you doing?
We just finished talking about talk radio. One of our head-on radio network hosts, Jeff Allen Wolf, and myself discussed it for about a half hour. And
I caught the end of that discussion. So,
Did you? Okay.
I agree with him, and I welcome anybody to call in and join our discussion.
All right.
If you have an extra line or two to
I've got plenty accommodate. Of lines here. What's up today?
Oh, boy. Well, it's funny. I publish on www.talkingradio.blogspot.com a weekly ranking of the worst talkers of the week. I don't know if you've noticed it. You haven't made it yet, Guy.
I hope to someday. Yeah, it's been my aspiration.
I would love to put a liberal talker on there. I have not... discriminate. I will follow anything if I feel they've said something inappropriate. Anyhow, last Friday, I selected as the worst talker of the week Don Imus. And
well, that's kind of a slam dunk, yeah.
Well, that was before the thing had percolated. I just heard what he said, and I thought, gee, this is not too cool, and put him down as the worst talker of the week. And now look what's happened.
Where are you putting your money? Do you think CBS will drop him, too? I predicted MSNBC drop him yesterday, and they did. What do you think about CBS?
I think there's a good chance he will be dropped. You got to remember that CBS is not like ABC and Fox on the radio. They have a sort of their distribution company or syndication company is Westwood One. If you look at their talkers, Imus is just about the most controversial. Well, they have O'Reilly, too, which is strange. But his show is almost an afterthought. It's not really, his TV show is where he does most of his damage. Mm-hmm. But, they're not as committed to the right-wing talk as some of the other programmers. So it's very possible that they might can him. And it could be, this could be the beginning. I was just looking up because I knew I was coming on, so I said, gee, I better check the Google search and see if anything is happening with, with Imus, because who knows? It might break any minute now. You try to stay on top of these things, and it's hard to do that. But the I noticed that some talker in Pennsylvania, in Allentown, Pennsylvania, has already gotten canned because he tried to do a promote. This guy has to really be, and he's been on the air for 17 years. I don't know how a guy goes on the air for 17 years and makes a mistake like this. He decided to do a promotion built on the nappy-headed hose reference that Imus made.
Really?
And, I just thought it was funny, and he got fired. So that's we're starting to see a little bit of a trickle down on this.
17 years, and he's dumb enough to ooh.
Yeah.
Well, I saw once I saw that the advertisements were starting to fall by the wayside. I knew that it couldn't be too far behind, and they can say everything they want to, but that's what it comes down to.
Well. Funny you should mention that, because I haven't posted on this yet, but I will be posting something today. It should be on in an hour or so, where I finally weigh in. It's always hard when you do a talk radio blog and you're getting into the intricacies of our business and talking about head-on radio or Lionel or something like that, and all of a sudden, Imus becomes or talk radio, I should say, becomes the number one news story on television and New York Times and all the big mainstream media outlets. So you want to weigh in with a little different spin on it. And essentially that's going to be my take is that if you listen to the NBC people talking about their employees and how they thought this was an insult to their employees, that has absolutely nothing to do with it. It is because of the money.
Yeah.
When you're talking about Procter and Gamble pulling out their advertising, and not just on MSNBC, mind you, not just on the Ima Show, they were going to pull out all their advertising on daytime programming. That's soap operas.
Wow.
Yeah. There's no question that this is just about the money, and that's why it's going to happen. And that, tell you the truth, this could be beginning of something very interesting, where possibly advertisers do start weighing in on some of the more outrageous statements that people like Limbaugh and Hannity and all the others are making on a daily basis.
We opened the show with a list of those today.
Yeah, I've got a few of them here too. I don't need to repeat them for your listeners, but they're here. And of course, they can go to MediaMattersMatters.com, and they're all chronicled there, at least the current ones.
Well, let me ask you, if CBS puts Imus aside, he's still with his syndicator, isn't he?
No. CBS is their syndicator.
He is, okay.
Yeah, Westwood One is the syndicator. And he's on 70 stations, and a few stations have already dropped him.
They'll pick him up. Somebody will pick him up, don't you think?
Well, that's interesting. He has hinted that he might want to retire. He's got a lot of money. Yeah, my estimation on some of these older guys and some of these, I don't understand why Rush Limbaugh's hanging around when in a month or two he is going to be the number two talker because Hannity is just about ready to pass him. Why does he want to see his ratings are going down, and I've chronicled that on a post a few weeks ago on the website, on the blog, excuse me. You have to wonder, here's Imus, he's got more money than he knows what to do with, and why does he need to be on talk radio?
Yeah, that's like my father always said, don't go out like Babe Ruth did, go out like Rocky Marciano did.
Right.
Be on top.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, which we've been covering on Talking Radio, which we've tried to stay current on it, and we'll have some more data on that as well, is this big shakeup at Air America Radio, with the Sam Cedar show being canceled and the very, very strange decision to put on Lionel as their morning host. Of course, he's not starting for another month, which is interesting in and of itself. Which usually in radio, as you know, Guy, decisions are made usually within 24 to 48 hours.
They usually got the guy waiting right outside the door when they tell you you're done. I've seen that happen.
Yeah, I know, and that's why I am kind of curious why they announced this, why it's taking so long, because there's a lot of questions that need to be answered about what's going to happen to his syndicated show on WOR, what's going to happen to his weekend show. So but if you read the blogs, which my blog and several others that are out there, including Mark Maron's blog, which is excellent, The Morning Seditionist, and the Majority Report blog, which was Sam Cedar's blog, which I presume will continue even though he's not their regular host after, I guess, tomorrow is his last show, is that and these are the fans of talk radio. That's the hardcore fans, and they are not pleased at all with Lionel. They feel he's too irreverent. He's not really even that funny. He's certainly not political.
He's New York.
So it's interesting to see other people who kind of observe the industry from a business point of view say it's a good move, but I would say that the questions around what is Air America Radio doing are being asked right now, and this could backfire on them.
Well, I'm wondering about it. It was a shock to me, and I don't know where they're going. I can't figure out with this move. I just don't understand where they're going at all, because Lionel is New York.
Well, he's a libertarian supposedly. Yeah. Of course, that's always a you know, I have a joke about libertarians. I forget who's the one who I guess it's Bill Maher who says it. Libertarians are conservatives that like to smoke dope and have sex. You know, it's sort of like you know, I don't even know what a libertarian is. I don't know what a liberal is, for that matter. But
I like that definition, though. That's good.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting that that they've gone in this direction. We shall see how it plays out, because you're getting, you know, just like there's a lot of dissatisfaction right now that's developed amongst the bloggers and amongst the hardcore listeners to liberal talk radio against Ed Schultz because of his continual, at least Imus apologized for what he said. I mean, Ed Schultz is continuously bashing other liberal talkers and Air America Radio, etc., but he doesn't apologize.
No.
So, you know, he's starting to make a lot of enemies, and you start wondering where is he going with that. You know, it's, you know, we got such a small universe of stations, maybe 40 or 50 stations out of, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds, thousands, actually, of over 1,000 talk radio stations. And there's only 40 or 50 of them that are legitimately liberal.
Right.
And, you know, you can't be trashing your own team when you're on, the extreme minority.
Well, that's why we on the Head On Radio Network here, we feel that, we're trying to stay ahead of the game, and we think this is the new technology. I think the terrestrial folks understand that there's a future in internet radio. They're starting to put podcasts up, and a lot of them are streaming their shows. So, and they're not doing that for no reason. They're doing it because
people forget that 20% of Air America Radio's audience.
Yeah,
is listens online.
Right.
That's a tremendously. In fact, the Air America Radio is the, by the last count I saw, about the fourth or fifth largest streamer of online programming. Not just talk radio. I'm talking even some of the music formats that are very popular online. It's on that list. So yeah, there's no question that online listening is a very, very important part of the equation.
Bruce, your site again.
Well, it's www.talkingradio.blogspot.com, and I also would like to let your listeners know that this weekend we'll be publishing a new ranking of liberal talk radio hosts, needless to say, with Franken out of the picture and some other changes that are occurring right now, that the alignment is going to be a lot different than the one we did 3 months ago.
Okay.
So I can encourage your listeners to check us out probably Monday morning. Hopefully that'll be done.
And I can tell you from my listeners' reaction that I've gotten to your appearances on this program that they're also looking forward to the time when you will put up some sort of a ranking of internet radio folks as well. So that's a
absolutely yeah. And I have not believe me, I'm very much aware of it, and I want to get back into that because I do think that's an important part of the equation.
I'll send you the $20 later. Bruce, thanks so much for being on the program.
Okay, thank you.
Talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, bye now. TalkingRadio.blogspot.com, and anything you need to know about talk radio. And Bruce is going to start doing something about internet radio on there as well. And that's a darn good thing to hear from all of us people out here in internet radio land, certainly. So we're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a minute or two. Don't go away. back with you here in the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Got a report, and we're waiting for verification of it. Got a report that CBS has come down on IMUS as well. So we're waiting to see if that's been substantiated, that that's the initial report that we've got. So anybody hears that for a fact, let me know. Call Les Moonves over at CBS. He's the head honcho there, and ask him. I'm sure you'll get right through to him. Hey, for all of you who are looking to better yourselves, looking to get a better job, we touched on this yesterday, and I did some research on this because I wanted to give you the straight dope, if you know what I mean. And if you, I know some of you have been out looking for jobs and gone to the employment office and employment services and all this. At long last, you know, the White House has admitted that George W. Bush is not up to the task of being America's commander in chief, and W's decided to look for a war czar to run the wars. And if this interests you, if you think that you might be good at running wars, and as we've said, since it's working for the Bush administration, you don't have to have any previous experience, any expertise. Hell, half of them in that administration don't have any expertise in anything. So I think your qualifications, no matter what they are, may be okay. W's new aide-de-camp will handle the day-to-day activities involved in the wars that Bush has got going right now, and that person will be available to take over any new wars that Bush might fancy over the next couple of years. And having this war czar in place will allow Bush to personally oversee the decay of the United States nation into a third world cesspool. So he can do that. The czar is also going to be a convenient punching bag if the surge kind of doesn't work, which is kind of looking like it is not working. But I did all this work for you. And here I have it. You can call USA Jobs if you're interested in this job and you think that you might have the qualifications for it, which are practically nothing. If you can talk and chew gum, you can get it. Junior's push has proven that. USA Jobs at 703, and I'm not kidding now, 703-724-1850. You call that number and tell them you want to apply for that war czar job. 703-724-1850. Or you can call 202-456-1414 and ask for Carl. Yes, Carl Rove. 202-456-1414. That's Carl's number. You got to get you the switchboard. Just ask for Carl. Tell him I sent you. And tell them you want that war czar job, and tell them to send you a ticket so you can fly into Washington National Airport and have them pick you up, take you over to the White House. You can talk to Carl. You can work out the pay. It's something under a couple hundred grand a year. So, you know, if you're currently a security guard, or if you've been in the Army maybe 20 years ago and you were a private or something, or, you know, if you work for any of these security companies for $6 an hour, $7 or whatever it is, you might be able to get this war czar job. And I think it'd be a good job. Really, I think it would. And I see we're getting it confirmed that IMUS has been fired from CBS as well. Well, but again, call Carl. 202-456-1414 and tell him Guy James personally, and by the way, I will send in a written recommendation for any one of you that applies for that job. You just call me, let me know, and Carl and I are tight. And I'll recommend you for the job. Old pal that he is. Carl Rove. Where were we here? Got notes sitting all over the place. Did you ever make notes to yourself and then later you go, what did I write that for? I see that Paul Wolfowitz has had to the newsroom just ran in this bulletin to me. Paul Wolfowitz had to apologize to the World Bank directors about promoting and giving a raise to his little sweetie pie, his mistress, who's his secretary. You know, he. he couldn't get the money from the World Bank, so somehow he got her into the State Department, but her salary was paid for by the World Bank, and she got a salary of $193,590, and that's more than Condoleezza Rice makes as Secretary of State. Yet this woman's being paid through the State Department. Paul Wolfowitz, for many here, is best remembered as the one of the spiritual authors of the Iraq War. He's the Deputy Secretary of, he was the Secretary, Deputy Secretary of Defense, who, if you'll remember, once assured the United States Senate that once we liberated Baghdad, we'd be greeted with flowers and candy and so forth, and that the war could be financed by the Iraqi oil. Oh, I remember him sitting in front of that panel and telling them so sincerely that this war would be financed by Iraqi oil revenues, and besides, we wouldn't be longer there than 6 months anyway. But he had to go on and tell the World Bank folks that he was sorry that his girlfriend, what was her name, Riza, Shaha Ali Riza, he had a romance with her. She's an Arab assistant, and there are rules at the World Bank about fraternization. And the other problem was, everybody forgot to mention this, the story already had a wife. A minor detail. Surely no good Republican right-winger would, no. So she was whisked away from the bank when her lover found her a job at the Department of State working for Elizabeth Cheney. Oh, God. At a salary paid for by the bank, since she's still technically an employee there and only seconded of 190, and that's more than Condoleezza Rice gets. And Friday, he had to apologize. Well, well, well. Is he still married? I wonder. I'll have to call Paul. He's another one that's a good friend. Oddly enough, I do know somebody that knows him very well, and knows Richard Pearl very well as well. It's a small group there in Washington, you know, and it's really surprised me one time. We were having dinner, and this fellow I know real well, we were having dinner at this really cool restaurant upstairs restaurant that, so exclusive, it doesn't even have a sign out front. People just know it's there. Anyway, we're upstairs having dinner, and I got to talking. In fact, I brought it up about Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz, and I said, I want to ask you, his name is Paul, and I said, Paul, I want to ask you some names. What you think of them? And I said, I don't know. I brought up a few of them, and I said, how about Richard Pearl? He said, oh, he's the biggest son of a bitch in Washington. He said, everybody hates him. They hate him. He's hated by everybody in Washington, although he does have some influence. And I said, Paul Wolfowitz. He said, love the guy. He said, in fact, if he walked in here right now, I'd probably give him a big hug. He says, I hate everything he stands for, but he's a friend of mine. Man, isn't that Washington? Isn't that just Washington, D.C.? Love the guy, hate everything he stands for, and yet he's my friend, and I'd give him a hug right now. I don't get that. Somehow that just doesn't compute with me. If you get a chance, you're going to have to Google this. I'm sorry, I don't have the link right now. Lee Iacocca, along with Catherine Whitney, wrote an article called Where Have All the Leaders Gone? Just go ahead and Google that with Lee Iacocca, Where Have All the Leaders Gone? And you're going to see an article by Lee Iacocca and Catherine Whitney. Just a withering, withering condemnation of the Bush administration and how they've run things in Washington, D.C. You know, for those of you that are young, there was a time, 20, 25 years ago, I was hoping Lee Iacocca would run for president. Always thought the guy would make a fabulous president. Great businessman. But in this article, I guarantee you will enjoy reading this. He says, had enough? Am I the only guy in this country who's fed up with what's happening? Where the hell is your outrage? We should be screaming bloody murder. We got a gang of clueless bozos steering our ship of state right over a cliff. We've got corporate gangsters stealing us blind, and we can't even clean up after a hurricane, much less build a hybrid car. But instead of getting mad, everyone sits around and nods their heads when the politicians say, stay the course. Stay the course. You got to be kidding. This is America, not the damn Titanic. I'll give you a soundbite. Throw the bums out. You might think I'm getting senile, that I've gone off my rocker, and maybe I have, but someone has to speak up. I hardly recognize this country anymore. The President of the United States has given a free pass to ignore the Constitution, tap our phones, and lead us to war on a pack of lies. Congress responds to record deficits by passing a huge tax cut for the wealthy. Thanks, but I don't need it. And the most famous business leaders are not the innovators, but the guys in handcuffs. While we're filling in Iraq, the Middle East is burning, and nobody seems to know what to do. And the press is waving pom-poms instead of asking hard questions. That's not the promise of America my parents and yours traveled across the ocean for. Look that up. Just look that up. I know that you will enjoy seeing that article called Where Have All the Leaders Gone? I'm sorry I don't have the link with me right now, but it is a fabulous article by Lee Iacocca and Catherine Whitney. You most assuredly will enjoy reading that article. I certainly did. It's quintessential Lee Iacocca. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today. We had good guests today, good conversation today. I enjoyed it today. I hope you did as well. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And don't you dare forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.